Welcome to this edition of My Car Guru. This is Lenny Lawson, and I am happy to be your pilot today on this episode. We are getting into several different interesting topics, I think. It's all part of the Guru School of Defensive Car Buying. On yesterday, basically, we talked about fake advertising and the things that you will run into. Today, we're going to talk about contacting the dealer. And that's like me or my representatives. So we're going to be talking about ways to prepare yourself the right way, not the wrong way. But first, I do want to talk a little bit about an experience I had this weekend. Just a little while ago, really, I insulted a lady about the value of her car. Didn't mean to. You know, when you get your emotions and your expectations all wrapped up into what you think something is worth, if somebody comes in and makes an offer that's half of that, then it's easy to get insulted. But, you know, it's nothing to get insulted about because, you know, it's just an opinion, and it's either based on fact or not. And when somebody asks me to, for example, give them a quote on the value of a car, I am trying to determine several things. Well, what is the marketability of this vehicle? Now, you know, when it comes to new vehicles, it's different. So first on new vehicles, marketability, condition, and mileage. Those are basically the three things that determine the value of a car. Now, when it comes to old cars, which is the case where I insulted this person, didn't mean to, you're talking about other attributes. For example, originality. Is it unrestored or has it been restored? And there are so many different layers to each of those, it's not even funny. But restored to one person is not restored to another. There's different levels of restoration to make a car look pretty. You know, you can paint it, and it's, you know, it looks good. But to make it really something that's going to win a trophy at a show or to win an award at an Antique Automobile Club of America event, the car pretty much has to be just about original, just about perfect. I mean, from the hose clamps to the, you know, the paint finish, just you name it. So originality is really big right now. If something's original, untouched, even if it, you know, the paint's a little faded or it's got some places where a buffer has burned through the paint even, like on my Ford Bronco. People like that. A lot of people like that. Others will look at it and say, "Why aren't you, are you going to paint that?" And I say, "No, I'm not going to paint that. That's original paint." Well, but it's burned through. I mean, it's obviously, I can see the primer. That's okay. It makes it worth more. Really? So people just don't understand. So originality, condition. There was, you know, condition was an issue with a new car. Operation, you know, if it's a late model used car, you're going to pretty much assume that it's okay, which may be a mistake at times. But when it comes to operation, there are certain things that cost a lot more money than others. You know, if the steering is not right, like on this Mustang that I recently bought, the steering's got a lot of play in it. That's a pretty inexpensive fix. Brakes, pretty inexpensive. Engine and transmission, not inexpensive. Electrical issues, potentially not inexpensive. So operation is a totally different level when you're talking about antique cars. And then you get into another area that's not a part of evaluating a newer or later model car, and that's rarity. Rarity involves things like the number of that particular car that were built. Another thing is the number of vehicles like that are still existing. I mean, you could have a bunch of cars that were built, like Chevy Vegas, for example. A bunch of them were built. But the problem is not many exist anymore because they were junk. And, you know, they just rusted away. I can't tell you, I don't know that I've ever seen a Chevy Vega that has been restored. Now, I've seen some original Chevy Vegas, and they'll bring some money. You know, especially they had a limited edition Vega. It was called the Cosworth Vega. I think it was back in 76. They teamed up with a company called Cosworth out of England, and they put a dual overhead cam fuel-injected engine with headers and stuff like that. The engine had a plate on the top of it that was autographed by the guys who put it together. Really cool engine and a really crappy car. And so, boy, my alarms are going off like crazy. Let me turn that off. There you go. I'm sitting at my computer, and you hear those little dingy noises. That's because somebody sent me a text or something. So you can tell this is live TV, right? Except it's live radio. So anyway, rarity, numbers built, numbers still existing, options that the car has. So if you've got an older car, I was looking at one the other day that didn't have air conditioning, didn't have power steering, didn't have power brakes. It was a nice car. I had an automatic and, you know, didn't have power windows. I mean, there's a lot of options that if they're there, they add value to the car. If you look at Hagerty's evaluation tool, which is Hagerty.com, if you want to go and value a used car, still got to know what you're doing, but you can get a general idea of what's involved. you know, if you see a car that doesn't have an automatic, for example, or does have an automatic, let's say it's a Mustang. If it's an automatic, it's worth less. So it says deduct $1,000. If it doesn't have air conditioning, for example, it may have a deduction for that. So all of this stuff has to be taken into account. The more optioned a car is, the more heavily optioned a car is, the more it's worth. Number of doors has a big impact. You know, that's a rarity issue. Two doors were less available, and not as many people ordered two doors as they did four doors. It's just like the Buick Electra 225 that I sold not too long ago. What made that car valuable, or one of the main things, was that it was a two-door. It was not a four-door. And, I mean, I'd rather own a four-door car today, but, but if I want a Mustang, I don't want four doors. Of course, that's not going to happen. But on a, like that Electra 225, it was just... It was a Landau model. It was loaded. It had the big 455 V8 engine in it. It was only had 8,000 miles. There were so many good things going for that car. But the opposite can be true of a car. If you have a car that's it's pretty from 20 feet away, and then you get closer, and then you notice, you know, the flaws in the paint and issues that it's got the wrong wheels on it. You know, it doesn't have power windows. Doesn't have power door locks. Especially a car in the 70s, those things really matter and can affect the value. So these are things I don't like hurting somebody's feelings. I just don't. And when the expectations are really high and you come in with a little dose of reality, feelings are going to get hurt sometimes, especially in a scenario where maybe somebody's dad gave them the car, or it was the husband's car, or... You know, they had it for 30 years, and, you know, they've just been reading, for example, that these certain cars are really going up in value, and that particular car may be, but not that car, because that car doesn't have the right option, doesn't have the right features. It's not original enough. The condition is bad, and the transmission's slipping. So all these things can affect the value. So apologies to those of you who asked me to evaluate a car and it's not worth what you thought it was. I'm just dealing in real world, because in many cases I am not buying these cars to keep. And so there is a profit motive, shame, that I have. I do like to make a profit when I buy something and turn around and sell it. Right now, for example, I'm looking at some motorcycles. Now, I have very little experience. I've ridden a lot of motorcycles. I've had Harleys and Gold Wings and stuff like that. And I realized one day that I had too much to lose, you know, if something happened to me. So anyway, or maybe not me, my family. So I decided to stop that. But I have some opportunities right now to buy some motorcycles. And my goal is not to keep the motorcycles. It's to sell them, find somebody else to own them. And so that is a service that I provide to people, and some people want to take advantage of it, some don't. You know, you can get on Bring a Trailer just like I can. You can sell a car there. It costs $99 to list a car. You got to be a member, and you just got to sign up, give them a credit card number, and they'll put you in there. Now, they won't spend any of your money unless you buy something or if you list a car. Like I say, it costs $99 to list a car. You can list a car on eBay. You can put it in on Facebook Marketplace. You can put it in your front yard with a for sale sign in it. What value then do I bring to the equation? Or somebody like me, it doesn't have to be me. Exposure. I'll give it more exposure. I'll do a really super duper job on pictures and telling the story. I put all that stuff together for you, and I know how to present it to get the most money out of the car. I know what's important, what buyers want to hear. You don't, more than likely, because you don't do this for a living. And I get that. I'm not bragging. I'm just telling you like it is. I mean, if somebody said, Lenny, will you come wire my house? I'm going to say, no, because I don't know anything about wiring a house. Now, could I do it? Maybe if I got my Time Life books from the 70s, and I might be able to figure it out. But I'm not the kind of guy you want to hire to wire your house. I am the kind of guy that you want to hire to help you make a good decision buying a car or getting it serviced or solving an automotive-related problem or selling an old car. I think everybody needs their experts, don't you? I mean, like, if, for example, if I have a plumbing issue, I want to have a plumber on call. I don't want to have to meet somebody new every time I have a problem. You know, I like going to Zach's to buy my furniture. You know, I just feel, I bought all my furniture, and I know those guys up there. I feel comfortable doing that. I like going to Mahoney's to buy my ammunition and outdoor clothing and rock climbing gear. I'm kidding about that last one. I like doing business with people that I like. And you know what? I'll even pay them more because I like them and because they take care of me. And if I call them, you know, it's going to make a difference. So I want people to look at me at Gateway, my business, my service advisors, technicians, Abby, Audra, Ben, Max, all of my people that work here in that same vein. It just makes you feel good, I think. And, so if you need an expert, I don't know everything about cars, but I know a lot, and I probably know more than a lot of other people out there, with especially when it comes to buying, selling, and trading and that kind of stuff. And we're going to get into the school of guru school of defensive car buying here just right after this break. I'll be back in just a minute. All right, I am back and here to educate a little bit and give you some advice I think that will help you when you go to buy a car. My recommendation for the average car buyer today is to not go to the dealership first, to not go in blind. There was a time when that was about all you had. You know, you would see a car in the newspaper and you get all fired up about it and pack the family up in the station wagon and head down to Looney Chevrolet in Kingsport or Sherwood in Johnson City. Maybe drive down to Lawson Chevrolet in Greenville and go to buy a car. And there are still people that do that today. However, approximately 90% of all car buyers go online first. And I think the best way to contact a dealer is through their BDC. That's the Business Development Center. That's the number. If you call a dealership many times and you push one for sales, two for service and so forth, you know, because they don't have a telephone operator. You know, if you push one, it's probably going to take you to their business development center. You won't be talking to a salesperson in any medium-sized dealership or greater. So, and I think those are the people that you need to talk to at first. Katie, that manages our BDC, she'll be one of the nicest people that you ever talk to, but you may not want a Ford or a Nissan. Or a used car that we have in stock. If you end up going through somebody else, then the BDC people are usually the best front point of contact. Now, Katie has greater, depth of knowledge and can help a buyer more than a lot of BDC operators. A lot of them are just operators, and they're just there to get your name, your contact information, and then they'll have a salesperson contact you. But, I think keep as much of an online as far as, your communication with them, like text and email and stuff like that. Keep as much of it online as possible. Then, you know, talk to them by phone and just make doggone sure that they have the unit in stock that you're interested in. Because a lot of dealerships will, I know you're going to find this hard to believe, but some of them will lie to you. And they will tell you that they have something in stock when they really don't. It may be online. It may be an ad car. And when you go to look at it, oh, they sold it yesterday. Now, I'm not going to say that hasn't happened at my stores before because we back in the old days, we'd run an ad. We had to have the ad ready. If we wanted to run a Monday ad, we had to have it ready by Wednesday or Thursday of the previous week. And like if we only had one or two of them, we could have sold them over the weekend. And then when the ad comes out, voila, they're not here anymore. And then you get accused of being a crook. So that does happen. And that can happen online as well. Just make sure that the car's in stock. Don't expect them to hold it for you, though. Like if they have one, they got no obligation to hold that for you. Somebody comes in, let's say that you said you made an appointment and you wanted to go in look at it and say, well, I can't get in until Monday. Will you hold it for me? They're probably not going to, because unless you send them some money. Now, if you want to put a couple $100 deposit or a $1,000 deposit or whatever, refundable, of course, then maybe they'll hold the car for you. But there's too many other salespeople that might need to sell that, especially in the low supply world that we are operating in right now. So make an appointment and tell them when you're going to show up. And typically they will greet you at the door. Katie comes out and greets everybody that's an internet customer. And, sometimes Abby does it. Sometimes we have another two people that back up Katie for the internet department. But now all dealerships are different. I mean, you might go to a big store, for example, in Knoxville, and they've got 15 people. More than likely, they're just more or less telephone operators, and they're not going to be the ones selling you the car. It's going to be a salesman on the floor. You're just making your appointment through them. So just make sure that you go through the internet department. I think it's a safer way to start the process, and you can get some pricing and everything that way. You just might not be able to, the car may not be there when you get there. Just be prepared for that. Like I say, avoid the lot until you're ready for it. It's nice to have a name in your pocket, for the BDC person to, if they are using helpers, then make sure you get a name. And so that when you walk into the operator, or to the receptionist or whatever, another salesperson say, yeah, I'm looking for Bob Jones, and they'll look for Bob, and hopefully it won't be Bob's day off. Another big thing when you do come in, don't talk price from the get-go. If a salesperson comes up to you, so what kind of payment you looking for? Can I speak to another salesperson, please? That's a guy he's been trained by his managers to find payment buyers. And that's who dealers can make the most money on, because they ignore the most important things, which is the sales price, the trade value, and the trading difference. So don't talk price, talk value. What does the car that I'm interested in have? Get the salesperson to do a thorough presentation on the car. Say, I want you to tell me everything about this car, how it works. I want to go on a test drive. And then maybe we'll talk price, maybe not. I want to know what the value here is, that if I do spend the money, well, what kind of credit you got? That's the guy you want to run from, folks. Where'd you finance your car before? See, he's just fishing. He is fishing to find a payment buyer so that he can make more money. Walk away from those people. Certainly don't close on the monthly payment. That's going to be, you're going to be presented, even at my dealership, what we do is we present the selling price minus the rebates, the trade value, the trade difference, the tax, the tags, everything is on this one sheet of paper. Then over on the other side, you've got different terms and different payment ranges. So the payment ranges, when I say range, you can't quote an exact payment to somebody if you don't know what their credit rating is, because their credit can affect their rate. And so we give a payment range. It's a very small range. It's like $10 difference between the highest and lowest. But it does give you a ballpark figure, and it's kind of a guide. Now, I don't mind quoting payments to people like that, where they realize that that's not the payment. That just is a little bit educational, because some people just don't, they don't use they don't do the calculations before, but you really do need to know, what can you afford monthly? Is it $500 a month? Is that your limit on a monthly budget? Well, what will that buy? That's what you need to do the math on. Just go to bankrate.com or whatever. There's all kinds of payment calculators in there that you can use, and it's a good way to back into what kind of a selling price that you can pay to get to that payment. Don't tell them that you have $500 a month to spend, because they'll sell you a $350 a month car for $500. The unethical guy will. So these are a couple of things. And then the last thing is the most important thing, and I'll tell you what that is right after the break. Okay, so you've been there all day at the car dealership, and you're exhausted, and finally you look at your wife and said, "Honey, let's just buy the car." That's no way to buy a car. And if you do it, as they teach at the Guru School of Defensive Car Buying, you won't feel that way because you did most of the work in the luxury of your own home on your computer talking to a nice lady on the phone. And when you go into the dealership, you get a nice little value presentation on the car. You know what the payments are going to be. You know what your purchase price is going to be. And then the most important thing that you can do is this. Go home and think about it. Now, how many car dealers tell you, "Folks, what you need to do right now instead of buying this car is go home and think about it"? None. And so, my salespeople don't like it when somebody goes home and thinks about it. They would rather you buy right now. That's the truth. But, you know, this is the car guru, and I'm telling you, I've seen a lot of people have something called buyer's remorse. And when you buy a car, you know, that's a pretty big commitment. And it gives you time to figure out what your insurance is going to cost you. You know, what are we budgeting for fuel? You know, gas prices have gone up dramatically. What are we budgeting for fuel? What kind of gas mileage does this thing get? You know, is this going to cost us more out of pocket from a gas mileage standpoint? What's my insurance going to be? You know, so these are issues that are worthy of thought. Now, if you want to leave a deposit on a car, that's fine. Get a receipt and make sure that it is a refundable deposit. And don't expect them to give you a refundable deposit if you're going to wait a week to make a decision. That's not fair to the dealership. Just, you know, you should be able to make a decision by the next day. If not, then maybe you shouldn't even be talking money. But these are the kind of things that a lot of people, especially young people, they make serious mistakes going in and buying a car based on emotion. And, you know, it's just something that you can avoid if you are prepared. So any questions, call me, 423-552-2020. Send me an email, LennyLawson2020@gmail.com. That's Lenny, L-E-N-N-I-E, and I'll be glad to help you anytime. We'll be back tomorrow with more from the Guru School of Defensive Car Buying. We'll see you then.